Kevin Fishbane.
I got Fishy Business, K. Fishbane.
Fishy Business?
Fishy Business. What I call him whenever I have him on the show, Fishy Business.
Bears beat writer for The Athletic.
Obviously, sports radio of the year in the state of Illinois. You don't get that by accident. He does a wonderful job for those guys.
I'm not leaving to cover the Detroit Lions.
All right, well, good.
Kevin Fishbane talking Bears.
Hey, Kevin. Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic.
I love your name.
It's a great name.
Yeah, great name.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This segment with Kevin Fishbane is sponsored by the Illinois Department of Transportation. It's not a game, Illinois.com. And by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric for all the right reasons. Call 866-4-SEASONS. We've done, what, Four Seasons has done two air conditioners and a furnace for our house.
I'm just kind of upset you didn't sing it. You just said it. But that, you know what? That's fine.
You don't want me to sing. When Ruthie Polinsky is in, she'll
then we'll have her. Okay, because, that makes sense.
Because that was if she, you know,
look, the show choir background, the choreographer of the show choir. Those are what we call credentials.
2 days in a row, she was killing it. And by the way, thanks to the folks at Prue and Circa for yesterday. What a delightful day!
Such a good time.
Yes, a really a good time, and great. Thanks for everybody who came up and said, "Hey, good to see some of the regulars." I see Mario from Hyde Park stopped by. And was it Gail V's?
Oh, yeah, Gail V's. Best grilled cheese ever.
That grilled cheese is outstanding. So let's talk to Kevin Fishbane on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at KFishbane, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. Fishy Business, how you doing?
Happy Friday, guys. Good to be on with you.
Was it your question about adjustments to which Matt Eberflus said, I'm speaking directly to D'Amico Ryans, that's a joke?
No, I think that was a Mark. That was the Mark Potts.
Ah, right, it's Potsy. Okay,
yeah, who got him on that? But yeah, you know how it is, Dan. We don't want to uncover any state secrets out there at Hallis Hall.
No, just you got to tell your guy Flusy though. You just got to tell him pause. People will get it's a joke if you step in that quickly and say it's a joke. You're not going to let people figure out it's a joke.
You know, there's evolutions to this, right, Dan? There's the hair. There's the, you know, comfortability in front of the media. Let's get the timing on the jokes can be the year four storyline for training camp next summer.
Got it.
I feel like that's the final frontier. If you get the timing with the jokes, now everyone in the room is more comfortable and we're all having a conversation rather than grilling the head coach.
I just think it comes out. A priest and a rabbi walk into a bar, right? 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 So eventually we'll get there.
Dewani. Yes.
How much does the outcome of this game mean for the Bears relative to the quality of their play?
Yeah, it's a great question, Dan, because like if the Bears lose 27-24 and Caleb Williams throws two touchdown passes and is efficient, like I feel like Bears fans should be pretty good with, you know, okay with that, right? Like it's all about how. What leads to the result. Is this team able to show improvements week one to week two? So I do think that you look at a formidable opponent on the road. Houston, this is their first Sunday night game in 5 years. In that same time span, the Bears have played several. They've lost all of them, but they've played many of them. So it's going to be a raucous environment. It's just one of those games that, like, you know, I feel like so much of this season could be encapsulated in a game like this where you're like, let's see the process play out. Now, if this game, Dan, was in week 15 and the Bears were one game out of a playoff hunt, that would obviously have a, you know, different, you know, it'd be a different narrative. But week two, second week with this offense, you got injured wide receivers, like result versus how you got there. Like you want to see the improvements. And if you see those, you might be okay. You're never okay with a loss, but you might be like, okay, at least we're seeing this thing going in the right direction.
You talked about the injured wide receivers. If Romo Odunze and Keenan Allen can't go in this game, what do you expect their personnel to look like on Sunday? And how much is that going to be a challenge for Caleb Williams?
Yeah, it's funny, Marshall, because you look back at last week and they only had essentially four active wide receivers. And now two of those four, as you mentioned, could be inactive for Sunday night. One of the things the Bears talk about a lot is Gerald Everett in terms of him being a bit of a mismatch. He could play kind of like a wide receiver. So do we see more 12 personnel sets if they can't go? Do we see more 21 personnel in the flip side where you've got DeAndre Swift and Khalil Herbert on the field, or DeAndre Swift and if Roschon Johnson's healthy. So, you know, the whole goal of this offseason in terms of adding skill players and skill talent around Caleb Williams is to offer Shane Waldron some flexibility that if you lose guys like that, you should be able to go to. But there, look, let's be honest, there's a massive drop-off in ability from those two receivers and who's next on the depth chart. You know, the thing about DeAndre Carter is if you look back at Carter's career, his best career season came with the Chargers, where he was with Chris Beatty, who's the current Bears receivers coach. So he's familiar with the system, with the scheme. He can play any receiver spot, which they like. But obviously, that's not a game breaker like a Keenan Allen, Romo Dunze. Tyler Scott, we know he's got the speed. There was a reason he was inactive in week one. They did not have a role for him in the offense in that game. So there are going to have to be some flexibility, some creativity if those guys don't go. And really, kind of buried the lead here, guys, you got to run the ball. Like, you've got to find a way to run the ball successfully for so many different reasons. Takes pressure off Caleb Williams, puts pressure on Texans defense, sets up, you know, different things in the passing game, keeps C.J. Stroud off the field, on and on and on. It's the old football cliche. But you look at the Bears last week, did not run the ball well. And this is a game, if you're missing even one of those guys, more emphasis on running the football well.
Matt Bowen said it yesterday. We were talking to him, and he said the best way to slow down a fierce pass rush, especially from those edges, is in the screen game. And he said to the running backs, too, he said, not wide receiver screens. He said, good old-fashioned running back screens. He said, you used to talk about screens and draws. Draws aren't used as much anymore. Do you agree?
I do. Well, first of all, Dan, I would never disagree with Matt Bowen.
You're allowed. Technically, you are allowed to disagree with Matt Bowen. Of course, he's not going to hurt you.
I'll disagree with you guys all the time, but I'm not going to disagree with Matt.
Okay.
No, I do agree. And I was thinking about this earlier in the week because, you know, that was one of the stories at training camp was DeAndre Swift as a pass catcher, that this was an element that he was going to bring to the offense that we just haven't seen in a couple of years from that position. And if you picture some of these wide receiver screens and then think about a Will Anderson or a Danielle Hunter as the guy in the way of those screen passes, that does not sound like an advantageous spot. Now, I've seen Caleb Williams do some wild things with his arm angles to get passes around guys like that. But this is a little different than being on the practice field. So I agree. I think you can set that screen game up with Swift. Herbert can run it too. You've got options there. And that keeps Hunter and Anderson honest and keeps those guys from, you know, pinning their ears back. I'm trying to see how many football cliches I can get done.
No, keep them rolling. I'm counting.
I'm rolling. It's week two. Here we go. We're in it. This is why you bring in DeAndre Swift, so that he has the versatility to be involved in this type of passing game to help out your offense.
So you brought up DeAndre Swift. We talked about the running game. I'm so concerned about the offensive line on the interior. I know the challenge may be not as stiff as it was week one against the Titans, but what's your confidence level that they've got this thing figured out with the center guard position? And how much is that affecting what you're talking about when you're talking about establishing the run?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple ways you could look at it too, Marshall, because you could say it can't be worse, right? Like, you know, you could go down that path. I think I'll use Tevin Jenkins as an example. I think Tevin Jenkins had a couple snaps where you're like, that's the Tevin Jenkins we know. That's the Tevin Jenkins who could get a big contract extension to the bye. I think there were a few snaps that Tevin Jenkins would like back, right? So you know his track record, you know he can be better. You know, Coleman Shelton, first game at center with this offense, with this scheme. I don't know if the Bears underrated Tavondre Sweat. I know I wasn't really thinking a ton about Sweat as I was going through this game last week. I mean, you knew he was going to be a big part of defense. He was unbelievable. So, like, as you said, Marshall, like, this is not the same interior line the Texans have. I think Sweat was outstanding last week, so maybe that plays a role. What's interesting is, so Ryan Bates did not practice yesterday. And in about an hour, we'll get the full injury report. We'll see where he's at. Because I wondered if they just need Ryan Bates to get to fully healthy and in game mode to put out whatever offensive line they prefer. I don't know if that's Bates at center and Davis at right guard. I don't know if that's Bates at right guard and Coleman Shelton center. That's my guess. But if he's not playing, you know, you could look at it if you want to go glass half full. This is a big opportunity for Nate Davis to prove himself. And I can understand why that would make fans bristle, because they've probably seen enough of Nate Davis. But I think the Bates injury is throwing a wrinkle in a lot of this in terms of what they want to do. But I do believe that you should see more consistent play from Tevin Jenkins. We know he's capable of it. And I would expect Coleman Shelton to play better. They felt really good about his training camp. And that was a rough first game and a rough matchup. And, you know, I also think, too, he goes back to run game, screen game, just things that can make this offense work a little easier. Set up some easy plays for these guys to gain positive yards, build some confidence, and be able to kind of set the tone in the trenches as opposed to letting the other side set it for you.
The irony is not lost on me when you say seen enough of Nate Davis. I would argue I didn't see enough of him when I needed to, and now we're in this situation where, but that's neither here nor there.
Fish, Austin Booker was the talk of training camp, and there was a very high level of excitement. We also saw on Hard Knocks all of the confidence that Ryan Poles had. He's like, you're going to like this kid. I know this kid, when they make the move to pop up and grab him. And we're reminded once the season starts that it's not training camp anymore.
Yeah, Dan, I was just going through back to my snap counts from that game. Booker did not play at all in the fourth quarter, which is, you know, when the Titans were kind of having to go a little pass first late in that game. I think there's a few things. Obviously, you've got, as you said, it's a rookie in his first game. It's a fifth-round rookie who didn't have a ton of college experience. You have all those things. I obviously think, too, Daryl Taylor was so good last week. Like, that's somebody – and DeMarcus Walker had a great game. So those are guys you're not going to necessarily want to take off the field. You certainly want to keep Montez Sweat out there as much as you can. This is going to be a unique situation for that defense because the Texans can hit you so many different ways with the way Joe Mixon ran the ball. And we know what Stroud can do with that receiving group. So I think that defensive line rotation is going to be interesting. And I'm sure you guys have talked about it earlier in the week, but that long touchdown run the Titans got on the Bears, Austin Booker was in the game. They ran it at Austin Booker. Not to say he was necessarily at fault for it, but that was not an ideal personnel group in the Bears had on the field. So, you know, if you're, he's out there, you'd prefer maybe the third down package where he's out there with Walker and Billings and Sweat. But again, I go back to Daryl Taylor. He earned that spot. He's going to continue to earn more reps in that spot. And I think, again, Booker's your four defensive end. It's just going to be game situations. And if you're playing a team that's going to pass the ball more often than not, maybe we see more of Booker. But you're right, it was a reminder that he's going to take a little bit of time, a little seasoning, to get into a groove where you're playing him more often.
Kevin, what's the conversation like when you're hearing about C.J. Stroud and how he's being described and how to kind of chip away at him and take him back down to a civilian, if you will?
Yeah, you know, the thing about Stroud is he's got such incredible arm talent. Like, he is the – here we go, cliche time. He can make every throw, like, from any, you know, any part in the field, and he's got the receivers to do it. So, you know, the Colts got a lot of pressure on him. They sacked him 4 times. I believe they hit him 10 times. And then you look at his numbers, and they don't reflect a guy who was under a lot of the rest in that game, 24 of 32, the 2 touchdown passes. So I think – I go back – I keep harping on the Mixon thing. I mean – think about the Texans and C.J. Stroud. If they're getting 150 yards rushing from their top running back, that's just really tough. So I think the Bears are going to have to find ways to make Stroud uncomfortable. And clearly the Colts showed you a bit of a blueprint in terms of gain after him. But then, you know, you lean on your corners. I mean, this is why you've boasted, and I think rightfully so, that you might have the best secondary in football. This is their guy's opportunity. You're on prime time in a main stage, Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon, Tyreek Stevenson. Like, this is a huge opportunity for them to show the league how good they are. I don't think that that's too much braggadocio for them. They are really, really good. But this is a game where Stroud can make all those throws. And if you can't get to him in the pocket, can those corners make plays in the football?
Velus Jones, active, inactive?
You know, I'm guessing inactive, Dan. I, you know, they did this with him a couple of years ago where he was inactive for, I want to say, 5, 6, 7 games in the middle of the season when he had that problem in New York and Washington, I believe. So, like, his spots he plays on the other special teams units are not spots that Tyler Scott plays. but I'm sure they have other guys who can play those roles.
Yeah, it's forget that. No, I'm glad you pointed that out, because I think we forget how specified. We just say can play special teams or can't, but there are very specific jobs that, even though you're both wide receivers or both have, you know, similar size and speed, there are jobs that some do that others don't. I'm glad you reminded us of that.
Right, because if you watch that pump block touchdown, Valus Jones is right there in the middle of that line. He was near Daniel Hardy when Daniel Hardy made the rush. That's not a spot you're putting Tyler Scott. And then Valus, like you saw it on Hard Knocks, he's their top backup gunner on the punt team. So, and again, that's not a spot that Tyler Scott's going to play. So if it's a one-for-one, you have to make sure you have the right guys to take Valus Jones' spot in those positions. I wonder if this is also a message send situation where it's just like, listen, we can't have a guy make that big of a mistake in a game and then just activate him the next week as much as we believe in him. Because what message does that send when he's a guy who doesn't play? You're not talking about a starter, a regular. So I don't know if that's the way they'll play it. But, you know, again, it comes down to, do they feel good about the guys who could fill those roles? And the other thing, too, if you think you have to score a lot of points on Sunday, do those four touches he gets on offense, are those important enough to your game plan?
No.
So again,
I can answer. That's not a rhetorical question. The answer is no.
And Dan, it should be no, because you should have other options in your disposal to attack that you don't need those snaps. So that would be my guess. But, you know, maybe it's going to be 5 or 6 weeks inactive. Then he comes back. I'm not sure, but I do think the receiver injuries thing also will play a role in that decision as well.
When was the last time a player had this long a leash, as we're seeing with Valus Jones Jr.?
I do feel like a lot of guys in the Bears, like over the years,
have had long leashes.
Yeah. I do feel like in the Phil Emery era, there was a lot of guys to, you know, draft picks who, but like the one thing, and the listeners of this segment know that I'm a Valus Jones truther, and I'm the Valus Jones conspiracy theorist, not even conspiracy theorist, because I don't get worked up over it when he's only playing like 8 snaps. Like, it's just hard for me. So I get what you're saying, Marshall, and this isn't like a starter who's taking snaps away from somebody who should be in those positions.
But is he taking snaps away from somebody who should be getting that time on the field to do, like a Khalil Herbert or whoever else you want to say?
So that's a good question, because I think, for example, that Khalil Herbert should have had more carries last week.
Okay.
And should those carries that Valus Jones got have gone to Herbert? I would argue. Now, look, Valus was effective in those few touches when he, on offense. For the way the offense played last week, those were three like their best plays of the game.
But that says more about the overall offense, though, right?
Yes, 100%. So I do think that this is a better game to have Khalil Herbert running the ball. I'm curious to see if Roschon Johnson's up. And by the way, speaking of Roschon Johnson, he's probably the guy who can play those special teams roles that Valus Jones plays.
Okay,
so that could be your answer. So, you know, like, I don't get. Again, I don't get worked up about him like being on the roster, being on the game day lineup, because I'm not sure like how many touches he's taken away from other people. Look, top 3 round pick, you do want to give him extra time.
Kevin Fishbane, thank you as always. Look forward to talking next week.
All right, take care, guys.
That is Kevin Fishbane, and I just realized something too. Valus Jones, and this, say, like, he's inactive. He may be inactive because of the mistake. You know what that reminds me of? Is the Barry Rosner rule about your golf clubs.
What's this rule? I'm unfamiliar.
Are you a golfer?
I play Top Golf. That's where,
okay,
I go to the bowling alley and play golf.
Just careful. Just make sure you put your Glock in the trunk or in the glove box. Don't
thank you for that.
Don't leave your Desert Eagle on the seat.
Okay.
If you're going to the one in Naperville, because they'll get you.
That's scary. But
so, see, Marshall, are you aware of this?
Like, I don't think I am.
People keep getting busted for having their guns out.
No, I got that part, but I didn't know it could be related to golf.
No, Top Golf. It's all happening at the Top Golf.
Oh, it's happening at the Top Golf.
In the Top Golf in the I-88 corridor.
In the parking lot of the Top Golf. What are we at, 24 now?
I think it's 24
gun arrests within the calendar year.
Wait, what?
Oh, come on, man.
Since January?
Yes.
What is going on?
It's legit like every other week.
It's hilarious. It's been a staple of High Noon where we've been tracking the counter of Top Golf gun arrests.
What is wrong with people?
I don't know. But it reminds you that the rule is if a club is being bad, you leave it in the garage.
Yeah, it's not in your bag.
You punish it.
Yeah.
You punish a club. Like sometimes your 3-wood is you get a bad deal with your 3-wood. It's like, sorry, 3-wood garage.
Yeah,
you're out of the bag and you lean up against the wall with the fishing gear and you stay there. And when I decide to put you back in the bag, I'll put you back in the bag. Same goes for like your lob wedge, sand wedge, maybe it's your 8-iron, and just say,
hey,
not,
there's a reason
not
why
today.
You can only put so many clubs in the bag.
But that's what I mean. Which is so many people on the active roster, Velas is the club that had a bad day. He's the club you kept shanking. And you say, you know, maybe if you sit here long enough, you'll learn your lesson and then you'll be good again.
But you don't throw that club out.
No, you don't throw it out. It's your club.
So
you don't throw it out unless you're my kid, in which case you immediately get on eBay or Sideline Swap or whatever he does
and find something new.
Find something new and different and better that will fix everything.
Sometimes a change of pace is good.
I guess. I don't know. Next up, we moved Chris Novinsky, who's running a little bit behind schedule. He's going to join us to talk about Tua Tagovailoa and NFL head trauma at 12:45. There was something that was said early in the game last night about the coverage that was being played that
right.
plays into what we were talking about yesterday about NFL trends and how it's affecting quarterback numbers. That's next.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It'll be third down and 5 from the 30-yard line. Jonnu Smith in motion, trips to the left. One receiver, Waddle to the right. Out of the gun is Tagovailoa. Sets up in the pocket. Now he's going the wrong way. He's going backward. His pass is intercepted at the 32-yard line. It'll be a pick six for the Bills. It's the third interception of the night. And it's the second one for Jamarcus Ingram. He goes in for the score. It's 30-10 Buffalo.
Westwood One's call of Thursday Night Football here on The Score. I was watching at home, watching Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit on Amazon Prime. And there were some interesting things said about what was going on in that game that dovetail with what we've been talking about as larger NFL trends, about passing being harder than it seems like it has been. And there may be all kinds of reasons for that, about why passing touchdowns are down, why the passing numbers are down in general. And I saw this tweet from Matt Bowen, because we talked about it with him yesterday. He said the Bills played too high coverage at a rate of 74.4% against Miami. Think about that. Three quarters of the time, they were in too high. And when in too high, it doesn't necessarily mean cover two zone. He means that encompasses cover two. It means two man. And that the loose definition of two man is the safeties drop back in zone, everything underneath is man. That's like what the Packers used to do to the Bears with Brandon Marshall and that offense and just throttle them with it. And it also means quarters coverage. And a simplistic definition of quarters coverage is the field is divided into fourths. The corners drop back, the safeties drop back. And it can be much more complicated and nuanced than that. But 75% of the time, in too high coverage. Now, I think this was the first drive of the game where Kirk Herbstreit noted something, and he broadened it a little bit.
A growing trend all over the NFL in the opening week is defense is putting two safeties back. We saw against Patrick Mahomes a couple years ago. Andy Reid and Mahomes had to adjust to that. Now we're seeing it really all over the NFL. It's why some of the numbers are down for the quarterbacks. You can see it here. It's forcing quarterbacks to be patient, and you got to be able to run the football.
It's why some of the numbers are down for quarterbacks, plural. And I heard that, like, oh, is it? I don't think it's really that simple. I don't think it's that. I don't think it's merely an X and O concern. I do think that's a big part of it, but I think it's the people playing the positions.
So you're saying the people who are playing in the defensive backfield, safeties and corners, that's the biggest factor for you?
I think it's as big a factor because they're better. They're so much better than they used to be. And they're multiple. That's why I asked Matt Eberflus when we had Matt Eberflus on about the evolution of what we used to call, and you remember.
Yes.
On when we would go through draft reports, right? Right. I did it again. I did the Matt Eberflus right again. Would you please throw something at me?
I have nothing to throw at you that wouldn't actually hurt you, so I'm not going to do that.
Then it's okay.
If we had the stress balls, I would barrage you with stress balls.
I'm at the point now where I may have to actually be hurt. So if I do that again. So when it used to be on draft day, well, he's a cover two corner. Yeah, we can get cover two corner the fourth. We can find some guy who's a college safety. He can be a decent cover two corner. And then Eberflus was like, no, not anymore. Not anymore. He said, we got to be multiple. And if you look at it, what was Tyreek Stevenson in college? Man corner.
Man corner.
Okay. Man corner. Like everybody's bigger, stronger, faster, with more fluid hips, with being able to transition out of the back pedal better. Much more disciplined with hand usage.
Well, as football has become a more passing game, not just the passing league, but just football in general, the pass has become the thing, right? Players have developed.
Sure, you just did it there.
Players have developed into the specialization of, hey, if you want to be successful in what's really important, you need to be able to do this. It's like the three in basketball. If you can't shoot the three in basketball, right. Your value So, if you're going to be a certain size and you're a certain speed, you need to develop this skill set to play at the highest level.
I just find it fascinating how quickly these things happen now.
Well, they have to. You have to. It's a league of adjustments.
But it used to take a couple of years and things would fall in fashion.
I would say it's taken more than one year.
Maybe it has.
Yeah, like,
maybe it has. Because last year is when passing touchdowns dropped. And in the article we read last week from The Defector by Ray Ratto, where he looked at, once again, we are in a superhuman field goal kicking environment.
Right.
Because there was a time where they thought it was just the doctored footballs. Remember the Bears had Jeff Jaeger, and there was a time back in the late 90s when they cracked down on the balls that were being used because they thought that was the reason why kicking was so good, and that the conservative coaches were so quick to say, oh yeah, well, the 50-yard field goal is not. Now a 50-yard field goal really is nothing.
Right.
It's nothing. So, but it's not, they can't crack down on the balls now. The kickers are just too good. And God forbid somebody should crack down on our balls because that would make a bad weekend.
So isn't this more about the evolution and development of athletes?
Yes. Yep,
like all the way around is what I'm saying. All the way around,
it
like,
is.
When people want to compare like LeBron and Jordan, they talk about the eras that they played in. Look at these guys that LeBron has to go up against, and how. And I'm like, but
I always say this: go back and watch
the physicality.
Watch the leaping. Watch up Jordan Bulls game from any era you want. You want to watch 1988 when he won MVP. And he's running around out there with Granville Waiters? Or do you want to watch 1998? You will be shocked. Absolutely just shocked at the difference in overall size, speed, length, athleticism. And in the NFL, which has always been I used the term yesterday, the dialectic of thesis, antithesis, synthesis, offense. Defense, offense, defense. You're doing this, I'll do this. Oh, I'm going to dust off this old thing back from 1966. I'm going to bring this back because I think this is going to work because it's gone too far in this direction.
Yes.
So I don't know what's next because it used to be, all right, you're in a shell. What did we say? All verts.
Because that's the way to push it back.
All verts. Take the term.
Take the top off.
You don't hear that as much anymore.
No.
Is that because those guys are so fast or... And you brought this up in the pre-show meeting. Is it because all verts means your quarterback needs a lot of time?
Listen, I can tell you this. The linemen today, on average, faster, stronger, all the things. Like, to watching defensive lines, if you watch a football play, and we're so used to watching the quarterback do what he does, and then as someone gets close to the quarterback, now you're paying attention to them. But, you know, the beauty of being able to rewind any play at any time, you can always go back and see what happened on the line. And guys are just getting blown up, blown by. I was watching that Chargers game last week with, Bosa on one side.
Max Crosby.
And Max on the, yeah, like, you just see guys just do what they do best. And How do they even stop it?
Spin, reverse spin.
Even sometimes just the ball, like it's, or they could do so many things at such a high level.
Or get blocked, essentially.
First
move blocked, and then chase it down from the backside.
Right.
Because you have a pocket, as we know now, is arranged in a specific way.
It's supposed to look like a horseshoe-ish.
And it can slide left. It can slide right. These protections are specific. That's why they make the mic point. That's why the center leans up and turns his head and points. It's like, you got this guy. This means you come help here, or you're going to chip here and reach over here, and the running back is going to step up into the hole to get that guy. So it's – and they still can keep spinning and whirling and spinning and flailing their arms.
See, that's what makes it so much fun. Like, you can scheme all you want, but once the ball snapped, let's go. It's just like Ron was explaining to us watching the Texans and the Colts. He was like, yeah, it's cool that Joe Mixon did all that damage. Let me tell you something. He was 4 or 5 yards down the field before he had to even think about it, because the offensive line was going old school. We're just going to punish you.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's what makes football great, though, right?
It does. The evolution of tactics. One of my favorite Eberflus words.
Right.
Being heaven, tactics. But he does have tactics, and he is doing what other coaches are doing now, and the way that they have built out the back end of this defense, that they're able to do what the NFL is doing. And if they do it to C.J. Stroud, see how it works. And when's the last time? You know, it's rare. Usually if there's a coverage bust, you'll see a guy running free. Or if it's, like you say, the play with Anthony Richardson where he just, made some ridiculous.
That's insane. What he did was insane.
Throw.
Yeah, that cartoon is the perfect description.
It was a cartoon throw. To have a guy where even I can understand why those safeties are like, I think we're good. Right? You know, you're that far down the field, the guy's falling down, and if you're a safety, you're like,
in stride.
Right? He did throw it that far and to that guy. So I'm interested to see if the smart offensive minds would be like, all right, enough of this. We've got the antidote. We've just got to get the personnel. We got to get the timing. We got to know when we're going to do it, but here it comes. Books are written about this stuff.
It's not about the X's and the O's. It's about the Jimmy and the Joes, you know?
It's, and the answer is always that it's about both. Here, the 630 texter said, Granville Waiters, Dan, really? Yeah, he was on. Wasn't he on the Bulls in 88? I'm pretty sure Granville Waiters was a 1988 Chicago Bull. And Terry Bors covered that team, and he used to refer to him as Granville Waivers.
Listen, that's going back in time. We're turning back the proverbial hands of time to get to that. But your point is well received in that. I want to now know what's next, and I think that's why I'm waiting to see the season play out, because I want to see over the course of the season, after having the 30 some odd touchdown passes in week one, which is a low for last whatever, will the offenses be able to, in the next month or so, get back to some normalcy or what we're used to seeing?
Maybe not that quickly, but the answer is always somehow yes, and if not, they'll change the rules.
That is something we can agree on. What they're going to do is change the rules to make it more like whatever people expect it to be like.
Chris Nowinski is going to join us next, Dr. Chris Nowinski, to talk about the scary scene last night with Tua Tagovailoa on the score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Trips to the left, the receiver to the right. Tagovailoa drops back to pass, steps up in the pocket. He's going to keep it. He lowers his shoulder, gets down close to the 5-yard line, and he is hit hard.
Oh, no.
He is down on the field. It's a gain of 6. He has a first down, but the concern now is about Tagovailoa, who has battled concussions for most of his career.
It was a harrowing scene of which we are all too familiar. And Dr. Chris Nowinski, who has been a guest on these airwaves many times before, was nice enough to take some time to join us today to talk about what we saw and what it means now in today's NFL and for us football fans. He's on Twitter at Chris Nowinski One. He's the founding CEO of the Concussion Legacy Foundation. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Dr. Chris, thanks for being here today.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for talking about this issue.
What is different now? What is the context of this happening to someone who has had the issues that Tagovailoa has had?
I mean, I think everyone's just more aware of the risks, both long-term and short-term. I think what happened to him 2 years ago when he was in a game he shouldn't have been, I think really woke everyone up that this is a really serious issue. So I think we're all sort of on pins and needles wishing this didn't happen and hoping for the best, but also realizing we're a little powerless on trying to figure out what's where this is all going to go.
With the risk that we understand football players take, because, you know, we talk about contact sports versus collision sports. Are you surprised that more hasn't been done? Like, I know I was reading a lot about, like, the Guardian caps, right? I think everybody was after something like last night happens. Is enough being done, because it is a violent sport and people are going to get hurt? Concussions are going to happen. Is enough being done in your mind in terms of whether it's the research, whether it's the preventative, and the way everything's being done from a medical standpoint in relation to the NFL?
I mean, on the NFL side, you know, the players have been on this now for 15 years, and they've fought and made the game much safer. They're not hitting in practice anymore. They've got rid of a lot of stupid plays. I mean, I think the new kickoff this year that no one was really begging for, but it's absolutely the right move, is a good sign the NFL is actually sort of trying to be innovative on this. So that's good. But, I mean, in the big picture, I also realize that the rest of football is not moving like this. And so while we can feel a little better about the NFL being safer, I don't know if it's going to change long-term outcomes, because if we also don't change college and high school and youth with the same aggressiveness, it's sort of just like a little bit sort of safety theater a little bit when we talk about big picture long-term outcomes. So go ahead.
No, I just think it's we have talked before about the aspect of safety theater that comes with almost the idea of referring to it as a concussion issue, when we know that, especially the famous study of West Lafayette High School by Purdue University, while the attention is paid to concussions, the danger is in the accrual of subconcussive hits over time. So is this yet another situation where the word concussion gets out front, but we're not talking about the actual dangers of repeated subconcussive head trauma?
No, I mean, I think that is a great point. Our uncomfortable feeling in our stomach when you watch all this is really more associated with our concerns about long-term health and CTE. You know, most people with concussions will bounce back. And so that is a huge part of the issue, is that, and the other part is that, like, the concussions don't directly correlate, you know, one-to-one with CT risk. We can't find a statistical association. So it sort of suggests that we just don't know nearly enough about this. And we have a lot more work to do. And I think the other part, you mentioned concussion, you know, we really should be calling these traumatic brain injuries. And there's just another study published last week showing if you call it a brain injury, everyone is far more concerned and is far more conservative in return to play. But we don't. So the NFL, they'll call it a concussion or a head injury. We should be talking about traumatic brain injuries and CTE, but you'll never hear those two terms on the NFL broadcast.
I know Marshall mentioned the Guardian caps, and now we don't look a second time to see him in practice. That's how NFL players look in practice, which tells me that, like you say, they've taken some agency in protecting themselves in that regard. And we as fans have kind of baked that in, which is a good thing. When do you think we'll get past, we'll cross the Rubicon of them wearing them in games without thinking they look weak or look like a dork?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, the norms have changed over time. We're still not fully endorsing it, just in the sense that the NFL has said they've reduced concussions, but that peer-reviewed study hasn't been published. So any player who hasn't jumped on the bandwagon, I don't think they're wrong. I think you do need to wait for the scientific process to occur. And the guardian cap they're wearing is not the guardian cap that's being sold to youth high school and college. It's very different. And so, but it is, I think it is, it's a great point that the social norms are changing tremendously, and that is a good thing.
From a medical standpoint, if you could see a singular change, whether that's in the NFL or across all football, what would you advocate for?
If we really want to change long-term outcomes so that all the football players we love, the not so many are developing CTE, there's two simple changes. One, we raise the age to the introduce tackling. Those hits, hundreds of hits a year on the developing brain, both creates risk by itself, but I think that the developing brain part is something we should be paying more attention to. And then beyond that, high school and college need to dramatically reform practice like the NFL has, where, fewer than 20% of concussions in the NFL are in practice. But for the last study of college players, it was 70%. Wow. So we're just wasting hits because we're not innovating in how we practice, because the players don't have a union to say, hey, stop putting CT in my brain. Teach me to play football another way. So without those two things, everything else is much smaller. The kickoff change is smaller. The guarding caps are smaller. Those two things need to be laser focused on. And even though they're not NFL level things, they are very much within the NFL's control. We all know they influence and they underrate youth tackle football. And I think that's the way forward, so that we can see our football players live long, healthy lives and not, know that when they start going south, we know what's happening.
Chris, I've had a lot of conversations with doctors that I know, and I got a long email, a heartfelt email from one last night who does work to cover, as they say, high school football games. And the thought from this doctor who says it's jarring to see people get hurt on national TV during an event that's meant to be fun escapism, but at least pro players are better educated about the risks. They get the benefit of the doubt that they have their own health and obviously their economic interests in mind. But how do we, where does the rubber meet the road to who needs to pay more attention to protect these people in public high school football, so public high school football doesn't function as basically a taxpayer-funded brain injury delivery system?
I mean, those are strong words, and they're not untrue. They're not popular. And the answer is I don't know. Like when you actually say that, it's a very unpopular thing to go. It's very bizarre that we put all these kids into high school so we can develop their brain and teach them things, and then we go out and hit them in the head a bunch and lose some of that. Mm-hmm. Like that on paper, that does not make sense. I mean, we can talk about, yeah, we're trying to teach them all these other things, but, at some point, it's fair to say the emperor has no clothes. Like the other sports where they don't get hit in the head 500 times a year, those can teach those things too. You know, there's the reason, football is almost exclusively men. Like, let's respect the fact that women develop into leaders too. Like, so I'm saying that not to kill high school football, but to ask high school football to be better. And to really be aggressive. Like, we do have on paper limits to hitting in practice, but it's not enforced and no one's monitoring it. No one's paying attention. And so it's hard to feel good about that.
If we have a high school parent, high school coaches, administrators listening right now that would like more information from your organization about some of these efforts, what can they do and where should they go?
Go to concussionfoundation.org. And here's a challenge for you. Every high school now in the last 15 years has put together a concussion protocol that's focused on management, not even prevention. We just published last year the first CTE prevention protocol. CT is the number of hits and the strength of hits. It's just a math problem. And so we showed on paper how you reduce CT risk. We put it out there, nobody is reaching out to say, we want to put this in place. I challenge a high school athletic director to reach out, Google CT prevention protocol, reach out to us, and we will help you implement that. But that would be a great step forward to show that you're paying attention and you care about this, and we've moved past the decade of the NFL denying it and misleading the public, and now we can all realize that day's over. Cause and effect is proven. Now let's move forward with protecting our kids.
And I know this has been just your life's work for a long time right now, and appreciate those efforts immensely, and appreciate you taking the time to share your thoughts on the score today.
You know, grew up in Chicago, love the score. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That is Dr. Chris Nowinski, founding CEO of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, on the Bernstein and Holmes Show with Marshall Harris in today. When we come back, you wait for it all week. Adam Studzinski has been hard at work in the laboratory, and he has for you the solid wall of sound next.